Welcome back to Camden Cast, your unofficial Baltimore Orioles fan podcast from CamdenChat.com. I'm your host, Mark Brown, and we are recording this episode on September the 10th, 2015, in the evening. Since last we spoke, the Orioles have kind of not been so good. We're kind of sad about it. What is it? They lost 15 of 19 games at one point in there, and the playoffs are gone. I'm joined, as always, by my podcasting partner in crime. He's Alex Conway. Alex, how's it going?
Life's all right. The Orioles part of my life is very bad.
No, the Orioles are not all right.
But, yeah, I'll be all right. How about you?
I will also be all right. I hope that the Orioles find a way to get back above 500, at least 2.500 at the end of the season. I don't think they're going to, but that's what I'm clinging. I'm clinging to that at this point in time. I'm not one of those people who's sitting there reacting and saying, well, now I hope they lose a bunch of games so they get a top 10 protected draft pick. I guess on a practical level that should happen, but that's loser talk and I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't really like it either, to be honest. I never think a major league team should potentially should want to lose games, or you as a fan should want your team to lose games. I mean, I get, like you said, like a practical financial spreadsheet kind of way. Yeah, sure. It would be best if they had a top 10 protected pick, and honestly, they'll probably end up getting one anyways, but it would be cool to see them play well against the division, ruin some hopes, some dreams,
kick,
some other people.
Kick the Blue Jays out of the division lead or keep the Yankees out of the division lead. I don't care. One or the other.
Yeah.
Since we're clearly not keeping the Blue Jays out of the playoffs entirely at this point.
No. They have been the exact opposite trajectory of the Orioles.
It's pretty bad. I don't know. I mean, I guess the thing is, because it's like, well, what if they kind of coast along a little bit backwards to, the number 14 pick? And then it's like, well, you know, number 14 is high enough where it's like you don't just want to give that up for somebody who's, you know. I think one of the Orioles fans I follow on Twitter, Luke Jackson, seems to think they're going to give up whatever pick they get to sign, like Ian Kennedy or Jeff Samarza or something like that.
Yeah, that would suck.
So, yeah, you know, you wouldn't want to have, like, the number 15 pick and then your big free agent signing is Ian Kennedy, and that's, you know, that's, you give up your top pick and then whatever.
You're kind of talking to me into the whole top 10 protected thing, Mark.
The amount of losing it would take to get to the top 10 is making me,
Well, where are they at now? I don't even know.
Let's see.
I haven't looked at reverse standings in a long time.
Let's vamp while I'm waiting for the baseball reference page to load. Jeff Samarza has surprisingly fallen off the table this year now.
Yeah. I wonder if he'll even get the qualifying offer. I think he will, but
the Orioles are currently in place to get the number 14 pick, as a matter of fact. That's going into Thursday's game, so I don't know if the results on Thursday may shade that one way or another, depending, but the number 10 pick is held currently by the Chicago White Sox, and the Orioles are actually only half a game, quote, ahead of that. The White Sox are 66 and 72. The Orioles are 67 and 72.
So it's a tightly packed race.
That is a tightly packed race. There's also the Diamondbacks, Padres, and Mariners, all at 67 and 73 going into Thursday's action.
Huh. Okay. Man, the NL is bad. I mean, they have, very good teams at the top, but the bottom is terrible.
Yeah, you have the Cardinals and the Pirates and the Cubs.
The Cubs.
And I guess the Mets now.
And, the Dodgers.
The Dodgers, who are somehow underachieving despite a $300 million payroll. But they're not underachieving as much as the Washington Nationals, which, Alex, I have to concede to you, it's actually not much of a concession. I'm actually reveling in it.
Oh, no, I joined in your Nats in your Nats hatred the other
ab
night
the
and
absolute
watched their bullpen explode and laugh and
abs
cackle all
It's
along.
so glorious. I love it.
Hey, if I'm gonna be miserable, everyone around me should be too.
I love that Bryce Harper called out the DC fans for leaving early, and then they also left early the next two games after that because the
Yep.
Nationals bullpen also blew those games in especially agonizing fashion.
Oh
I
God.
love that. I love that Nats
That's...
fans leaving has just become this narrative. You had dudes booing the Nationals manager after his post-game conference, and then the next game they had like extra security in there to make sure nobody could get in there and boo.
So good.
People have just been like taking screen caps of Ray Knight, the Nationals post-game show analyst guy, who, like, they'll do it on the Orioles mass in games too, like going into the bottom of the ninth inning or before the top of the ninth inning or whichever. They'll have like Jim Hunter and Dempsey do a little look in on the studio or whatever. So they have Ray Knight do these spots, and he's just been making the most like amazing agonized faces, and people have been screen capping them and putting them on Twitter, and I really I kind of love it a lot.
Yeah, it's always good. Well, the past 3 years, the Nationals are supposed to have been the best team in baseball. They have one playoff series to show for it
So the
that
preseason
they
win
lost.
total for the Nationals, Alex, and I will fully concede that Orioles are also not going to make their preseason over-under. But nonetheless, I will take glory in the Nationals. The Nationals preseason win total, the over-under, was 92.5 wins. So they would, if you bet the
Oof.
over, they would have to win 93. Their next loss, they lose the chance to get the over because their next loss will be their 69th loss. Which, of course, once you have 69 losses, it's impossible to get 93 wins. So
You go.
if they win out, that over's paying off.
Can't you be 93 and 69?
Right. Yeah. Okay. If they lose
Yeah.
one game and then win out. So they got to lose two games.
Okay.
Two of their last, if they lose more than two of their last 23,
Is getting more complicated than you wanted
it is. Here's the point. LOL
it
Nationals. That's the point. But the Orioles are also not
Exactly.
probably not going to hit their total. Theirs was 82.5, which if I
Yeah, I
had a
remember that.
mortgage, I would have bet it on the over. So it's a good thing I'm not a gambling person.
Yeah. Well, maybe they make it.
Because
Probably not, though.
I figured even if there was an underachieving Orioles team, they'd still be good for 84, 85.
Yeah, I thought so too. But one of the things that surprised me this year is just how garbage they've been against teams over 500. That stat's pretty, like, telling.
It's
Like.
really bad. I don't know the exact off the top of my head, but you've probably heard it out there on massive
Yeah.
broadcast. They talked about it recently. When Masson is bringing up stuff like that, things are dire. If they can't even ignore a problem like that.
Yeah, it's a big problem. I mean, they're like, I want to say they're almost 15 or 20 games under 500 against teams over 500, which is really bad. You got to beat those teams to win your division.
Yeah, like I mean, even if they were 500 against those teams, they'd still be in the wild card.
Yeah. And even the to I guess one of the funny thing, like, if you take out, I forget who it was, I forget the team, but out of like the five or six AL teams still like sort of in wild card contention or something like that, or the ones right above the Orioles, I think all of them have negative run differentials beside, and the Orioles have a positive one. It's just funny
Like Orioles,
stand
of course, they
stuff.
got swept in both series by the Twins, 1-6 against the Rangers.
Blech.
And those are the two teams that are like, the top two wild card teams right now, or the two teams. I think Texas is in the second spot, and the Twins are like the top competition. I might have that backwards. Yeah, Texas is in the second wild card spot. The Twins are one game back. So if the Orioles are just like 3-4 against the Twins and 3-4 against the Rangers, that's five games better. then suddenly instead of 67 and 72, they're 72 and 67, which would mean they would be one game back.
Yep, but...
But they completely stunk there. 1-3 against the Royals. They're probably going to lose the series this weekend, and that'll be like 2-5 if we're lucky. 6-9 against the Blue Jays.
Not good, yeah. I mean, it's just... It's bad. They've played bad. And, yeah. I mean, they basically have had one good stretch of baseball this season.
They're only winning
Otherwise,
month.
They've been bad.
June. They were 18-10 in June.
Yeah.
10-10 in April, 13-16 in May, 18-10 in June, 11-14 in July, 11-18 in August. 4-4 so far in September.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And that June run, the 18-10, I mean, that was really just 23 games. They went 18-5 in that one stretch. Otherwise, they lost all the rest of the games in June.
Yeah.
And I think that's when they had probably the weakest part of their schedule. That was like the Phillies, Braves part of the schedule, where they were just destroying everybody because it's the two worst teams in the league.
They played the Red Sox 6 times in June. They played the Indians 6 times in June. They were 5-1 against both of those teams in June. Swept the Phillies. No, it's not a sweep. 3 out of 4 against the Phillies. That's how you rack up 18-10 when you don't have those soft teams on your schedule in other months. You're
have they couldn't build off that. Yeah, they couldn't.
They could never get any momentum this year because the starting rotation has just been a giant disappointment.
Oh, yeah. Everything that they were last year, they have not been this year, which is, you know, 5 above average starters.
Except for Wei and Chen, it's like everybody's underperforming compared to, you know, what you were expecting. Ubaldo even had a nice first half, but now he's no
the
longer.
The exception of last night, crumpled.
Yeah. So the question becomes, Alex, unfortunately, we have to look ahead to next year because there's not much over the last 3 weeks to get very excited about. So that starting rotation, it's like I'm really afraid. Afraid's a bad word because I'm not like shaken. But I'm concerned. Because for instance, Chris Tillman this year is bad.
Yes, he has been bad.
And, you know, we can split hairs like the Massons of the world and pull out his Blue Jays games and say, well, except for the Blue Jays, his ERA is whatever. I don't know what the updated thing with that is. But if your ERA is over 5, you're bad. You've had a bad year. I don't need to split hairs any farther than that. But Tillman, if I remember correctly, when he was getting his contract for this year, they were saying that he's got the second highest first-year arbitration starting pitcher that's ever happened. And I was behind only like David Price. So he's already got that. And that's going to go up next year because that's just how arbitration works. Before we started recording, we were thinking, okay, maybe he's going to go up to like $7 million.
I think that's probably fair, 6.5 to 7. He's been bad this year. I mean, obviously he hasn't been good this year, but he's already got an all-star appearance under his belt, and he's still going to end up throwing probably, I don't know, he's got 26 starts right now, so he's probably got 3 or 4 more left. He's pitched 200 innings the past 2 years. He'll get close to 200. I mean, most likely, I don't know, he'll probably get like 180 or no, less than that. But still, and a lot of those a lot of that arbitration is based off of those like counting stats, like games started, innings pitched, and like comparables to people that were your age and had that at the same time. It's not off of like, you know, WAR and FIP and WHIP and stuff like that. It's much simpler. So, you know, he'd been pretty good the last couple of years, going back to 2012, and he's put up good numbers and gotten awards and, Yeah, pitch a
that's gonna
lot.
count for him more than any of that other stuff.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
he's
obviously, a 5 ERA is going to be a blemish in his arbitration hearing, no doubt. But it's not going to make it to the point where he only gets like a $500,000
right.
raise.
It's not gonna cost him
That's just
as
not going to happen.
much as you would think.
Yeah. And then the other guy, obviously, is Miguel Gonzalez, who's had similar troubles to Tillman. Both of them have been kind of the high FIP, low ERA, avoiding strong contact kind of pitchers, and both of them have had that blown up in their face this year. And Gonzalez is going into his first year of arbitration.
No, he's getting his second.
No, he already got a year.
Yeah, his is I think he is 3.3-ish million or something like that.
So he's probably looking at 5 or 6 too. Which,
Yes.
like, those aren't terrible salaries for starting pitchers, but you're committing rotation spots to guys that have 5 ERAs in 2015.
Right, and for like Gonzalez, you basically have to hope that whatever's got him on the DL now is is going to, once that's cleared up, he'll be back to the Gonzalez we remember. Oh, and by the way, I just pulled this up. If we want to continue to make excuses for Tillman's Blue Jays starts, if I've done the math correctly here, if we pull out the 5 starts Blue Jays against the Blue Jays from Tillman, in which he has given up 31 earned runs in only 18
Oh, in
innings. 5 starts, 31 earned runs, 18 innings pitched. I believe if we pull those out of his season total, we end up with him having thrown 125 and a third innings, giving up 51 earned runs, which is actually a 3.66 ERA. So
that's
if we
crazy.
want to hang our hat on that, it
So
is there.
he's given up like 40% of his earned runs to the Blue Jays this year.
It's
That's nuts.
yeah,
It's just too bad that he's gonna have to pitch like 5 times against the Blue Jays every year.
right. They can't hide him like they've done with Chen, really, against the Blue Jays.
Yeah. I mean, theoretically, it should be a good matchup. He's right-handed, and most of their lineup is too, but it's been a terrible one.
My mind is actually blown by that. I didn't realize it was that substantial still. Like, I assumed he had been stinking against other teams also. So, like, here's the
Yeah.
thing that we've kind of been winding our way around to, Alex. The Orioles would be crazy if they just non-tender those guys.
Yeah. And you could see a trade.
That's true. They might learn the
It wouldn't
lesson.
be.
Like, they probably should have traded Bud Norris before this year. Might learn that
Yeah.
lesson, and one of them.
Trading either of them now would not be learning the lesson. It would
No,
be
because now you're selling
repeating the same
low.
mistake. Yeah, now you're just selling low on guys. I mean, they could trade them for, I don't know what you could get for them. Both of them will be cheap. Both of them have had previous success, but you're definitely selling low on them.
So they're kind of locked in. Not only on the money, but on the rotation spots. And you just
You
kind of
would
gotta
think
hope.
Tillman and Gonzalez are gonna have a spot, and Jimenez and let mean again, that would be a salary dump trade if you got rid of him. But he's most likely locked in for a spot too. Although he's probably about another half bad season away from getting DFA'd. Because really, he's only been in his contract for the Orioles, he's been good for one half of one
Yeah,
season
he's
in
had
2 years.
3 good months.
Yeah. That's, yeah. I mean, if he starts off. Sorry about that. If he starts off next year just as bad, I don't know how much longer the Orioles are going to keep running him out, to be
It's
honest.
hard to say. And of course, Kevin Gausman, whatever. I mean, he'll be in there, I guess. Unless they
Yeah.
find a way to screw around him again. And then the number 5 guy, maybe they'll sign, like Luke Jackson and whoever is afraid of. Maybe they'll sign Kennedy or Samars or whatever. Maybe it'll be Tyler Wilson. I don't know. But Like, if Tillman and Gonzalez are bad again, you're probably talking $13 million between those two guys. And 40% of your rotation is bad if both of them are bad.
Yeah.
What do you do then? And if you trade them, what do you do? What do you do for your rotation? Because I think we've seen enough of Mike Wright to realize why his destiny is to be a bullpen guy.
Yeah, he's just, I don't know. You know, if you were a team that was not competing, which I guess the Orioles are now, and why he's in the rotation now, other than injury, you could throw him in and see if he could, you know, learn at the major league level how to get better and more consistent. But if you're trying to win something next year, you can't just hand Mike Wright a spot and say, get better. That would be too, I don't know. You can see it, sort of. I mean, he can throw really, really hard, and he can throw really hard late into games.
Yeah, he looks like a guy who's just give him two innings, and he'll throw like 98 and strike guys out. And he could just be the next Tommy Hunter, except probably with less personality. Just no slight on Mike Wright, because Tommy Hunter was quite a personality.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another $4.5 million that they committed and didn't need to.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you said, like they could have traded him in the offseason, I guess. Would have gotten a bit more for him.
And Junior Lake? You like what you've seen at Junior Lake, Mark?
I don't remember seeing Junior Lake. I know that I have, but I don't remember it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Tommy Hunter, by the way, in 15 outings for the Cubs, has a 5.84 ERA. So.
Yeah, I think his first appearance, he immediately gave up a home run.
Tommy went boom.
Yeah.
We know what that's like.
Yes, we do. I think he's given up a lot of home runs since
he's
being
given up three in 12 and a third innings, as I look at his baseball reference page right now. That's a lot of boom.
Yeah, a little too much. And but yeah, I don't know. So I mean, you know, if they hadn't traded some people, they would have some options. But they did, and I don't necessarily disagree with the trades, but you know, Eduardo Rodriguez and Zach Davies are both guys that could fill in holes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I know we've talked about this before, and we'll talk about it again. Rodriguez, one I won't be mad about, regardless of how good he ends up being. Well, that's not true. If he wins four Cy Youngs in a row in the 6 years of control with the Red Sox, I might get a little mad. But right now, I'm not mad. But as I think we talked about in the last podcast, or maybe the one before, Zach Davies, that trade I don't know about as much. Because Gerardo Parra has basically been the worst-case scenario of that trade so far. And
basically,
I feel like that is something that could have been predicted, and was by me, if I might brag a little bit.
Yeah.
Like anybody who looked at his numbers, you could have just imagined, oh, he's having the best year of his career. Oh, he's having the best batting average on balls in play of his career. And then he comes to the Orioles, does not have as good batting average on balls in play, and suddenly his numbers are not so good. You could have seen that coming.
Yeah, he was good for like a 2 week stretch for the Orioles. I thought he was going to be coming out of a little slump, but he just went right back down. And it's funny, like, a lot of the trade deadline outfielders have been terrible.
Other than Yoenis Cespedes.
Other than him.
Who wasn't even the first guy the Mets wanted?
Yeah. After Carlos Gomez and after Jay Bruce, they ended up with Cespedes, and he's been, I mean, there's very stupid people talking about him being the NL MVP.
That is a dumb argument.
Yeah.
But he's been really good for the Mets.
He's been really good.
Now, there's a guy, if you want to imagine the Orioles opening up the pocketbook.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the guys that would be cool.
because he won't be able to be a qualifying offer free agent. The specific contractual clause. Which accordingly will probably drive up his price tag. But it's only money. Since we are the Baltimore Sports Podcast, I'm going to quote The Wire here, as Omar Little says, money ain't got no owners, only spenders.
That's true.
The Orioles can spend some money if they want.
Yeah, I mean, they do have, you know, I've written about it before, and we had the post by Steve this week about sort of figuring out where exactly the payroll might end up after all the arbitration raises and stuff like that. His guess was around $50 million. I think that's probably right, of money they got to play with. So, I mean, you could go after some high ticket items if you want.
One of which maybe will end up being Chris Davis, because it turned out he's good. I think they've been saying there's a chance Davis could end up being the first Oriole to ever lead the league in home runs in two different years. That'd be pretty cool. Nice feather in the cap, although it will be a bit less exciting if he signs elsewhere for like 6 years and $150 million. Maybe that's a high estimate. But I have
six,
a...
6-150?
I mean, I have a feeling he's going to get a lot of money and probably more than the Orioles are comfortable paying.
It's just... Yeah. It's one of those things... I feel like all fan guesses tend to be light. Plus, you got Scott Boras, who's he's so big, he like doesn't negotiate with GMs. He goes straight to the owners.
Yeah, he'll be like, calling up Angelos.
You want Chris Davis because blah blah blah, and he sends them binders, and then he gets Max Scherzer or whatever, $15 million a year for the rest
Boras
of his life.
Boras will be like, "Hey, Petey. You saw what happened to your team when Nelson Cruz left, right? And then he's just, like, backing up multiple Brinks trucks to the law offices of Peter G. Angelos." just opens the doors. Just crashes them into the lobby. I don't know, like...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Chris Davis is... He's, like, 29 now. I think... I don't see him getting any less than 5 years, and I don't really see him getting anything less than $100 million. The only thing really going against him is last season, because if you just hit, if 2012, 2013, and 2015 are all seasons that a team would take from Chris Davis.
I mean, if he didn't have last year, we'd be talking about getting like an 8-year, $200 million contract, and nobody would blink.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, if his last year was just even as good as 2012.
So maybe, like, for that reason, someone tries to, like, mitigate their risk by not going 6 or 7 years, sticking around, like, 4 or 5. But I don't – with – there's not necessarily a ton of obvious bidders out there, especially, like, high payroll teams.
Dodgers are set at first base, I think.
Yeah.
The Red Sox are moving Hanley back to the infield, and then Pablo to first base, or is it Hanley to first base?
Hanley to first. And what, you know, I guess like Chris Davis could play right field, but he's not going to play right field in Fenway.
No. And the Yankees have one more year of Teixeira, and they're also very excited about Greg Bird.
Yeah. And they have another Aaron Judge, although I guess he's an outfielder.
He is an outfielder.
Yeah, he's another big guy that they could put at first base if they wanted to. So, you know, I don't, you know, Detroit has Miguel Cabrera. You know, it's like the Nationals are theoretically, I guess, could use a first baseman. Although they have Zimmerman. So I don't know. I don't know who's going to be bidding for him. I think I saw Seattle.
I think other teams that are going to have some first base holes would be like Astros, maybe the Cardinals. Zimmerman is signed through 2019 too, so that would be surprised if they would push him aside, because to the extent that a Mr. National exists, I think it's him.
Yeah.
And it's not like they could shove him to DH. or Davis.
True. Unless Mike Rizzo knows something we don't.
You never know what he might know. That's true. But yeah, so maybe that will help the Orioles in that it won't be like a 30-team bidding frenzy, but I still think he's going to get the money. And then if you let's say the Orioles sign Chris Davis for like $22 million a year, which might be light.
Yeah.
Like if you're dreaming about, okay, there's all this payroll available, like you've sucked up half of what you might spend right there. And that's just to keep a guy who's already here. So it's not even like you've added anything that wasn't here this year.
Because the payroll is not going up to $140 million.
I think it could maybe go up to $130 million. Because they've gone up about $10 million a year the last 3 years. So I think it's fair.
$130 million is probably going to be cap.
Fair to think maybe they can do that. But
yeah. $125, $130 million is going to be like the tip-top of what I think an Orioles payroll at this point. I mean, there's going to be some influx of TV money, like the national TV contract.
I think that's already started, but it's supposed to escalate. But then it will escalate for every other team also. So.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it doesn't really. I don't know how much it helps, other than that it could increase just salaries overall. I mean, they even still have that Masson case hanging over their head at this point.
They do. They do. The trial hearing was in May, and there's been nary a word about it ever since, which I don't have any idea what that means, other than I guess it's a complicated issue that...
Maybe the judge was just like, try to settle this, please.
I can imagine that's that could be a possibility.
Yeah.
The judge is probably like, look... I'm going to tell you something neither of you is going to like, so you can figure it out or, you know, whatever. But so I guess the question there, Alex, is have the Orioles already been spending less money because they were unsure what would the outcome be there? Or have they been...
it's possible.
Have they been... Because, for instance, what was it, like 2 years ago, Jonah Carey on Grantland wrote that article that was basically accusing Peter Angelos of being cheap. Basically his thesis was that Masson appears to be making X amount of money and the Orioles appear to be spending only Y amount of money and there was a gap of Z million dollars, which basically, if I'm remembering the math right, the Z million dollars is basically the exact $1 million that MLB is trying to make the Orioles or to make Masson pay the Nationals extra that would come out of the Orioles coffers effectively.
It's
basically been the exact same amount that Carey was thinking, oh, why aren't they spending this money? So if that's the case, then even if the Orioles lose, maybe they don't lose anything compared to what they've already been spending. They just lose some future potential. And then on the other hand, if they win, then maybe they could spend, you know, $20 million more than everybody thinks, and then maybe they could really hit like $150 million. But I don't know when that's going to hit, if it hits, and if
what the effect will be.
Yeah, and even if there's a decision, will it get appealed? And meantime,
another round of it is due here soon, another negotiation.
I believe starting the 2017 season, they will have to do another 5-year. Negotiation. Yeah, I mean, like this lawsuit is over 2012 through 2016. And then they got to do it again for 2017. So they might not even have the 2012 to 16 fully litigated by the time they line up for the next one. Which, you know. Not that we know anything about this, because literally nobody that's on the beat talks about it ever. I don't know why, but they just don't.
Well, yeah.
So anyway, the Orioles and money, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where I'm just like, you could just say, oh, Peter Angelos is greedy and blah, blah, blah. I don't know how much actual payroll Baltimore market can support.
Right. Like,
$130 million seems about right.
The fact is that it would be lower if not for probably if not for the Masson situation, which Angelos, you know, shrewdly organized himself. You know, it's a smaller metropolitan area, and that's the way it is. The city itself is, you know, not one of the nation's, you know, 5 or 10 biggest. The metropolitan area, if you count the suburban counties, is not in the top 10, I don't think. And, you know, there's only so much potential there. Like, everybody, you know, people, like, lament about, oh, well, why can't the Orioles sell out every game anymore? Like, that potential is just not there anymore. Once the Nationals took up, it's a lot of fans who are just going there instead.
Yeah, because you used to have just the people that would come up from D.C. for a game. And, like, because they just wanted to go see a baseball game. Not necessarily because they were big Orioles fans. So now they just got an accident.
That was the closest.
Leave in the seventh inning.
They leave in the seventh inning, and then people whine about it on Twitter, and they start taking Instagram videos of the people leaving and making sarcastic comments about the Navy Yard metro station being full. And it's pretty cool for me. Not for them. But
yeah, so circling back around. If you sign Chris Davis and you're paying him $22 to $25 million,
it's half your.
You maybe have another $25 million left.
And then you're saying, then we think, well, maybe they got to extend Manny.
They need to do that soon. So you're talking that, and then you need two corner outfielders. You need a DH. You need probably at least one starter. You might need a bullpen piece or two. You need, you know, maybe a catcher.
You need a better backup plan for shortstop than frickin' Evers Cabrera.
Yeah.
Because who knows what's up with J.J. Hardy's long-term health or effectiveness.
Yeah, I'm worried about him, Mark.
Yeah, like, Alex, here's the thing, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know already. Like, even if he's hurt or whatever, he's just so bad. He is so bad at the plate.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that he's his full self in the field either.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and this is 2 years in a row of, you know, back/shoulder issues for a guy that early in his career had a lot of injury issues. You know, he's getting older. He plays a pretty demanding position. And the only thing really holding up his value at the plate before was the fact that he could hit you 20, 25, 30 home runs. And I think he's got, probably like 15 total the last 2 years.
Yeah, he had 9 last year and has 7 so far this year. So your guess is very, very close to the mark there.
Yeah, sorry, that's
doesn't
not
walk
good.
Ever.
Nope. And I thought that there was like a chance he could become sort of like a spray hitting 285 guy, but that ain't happening. So it's just, I mean, is it because of his back and his shoulder? Maybe.
Right. Will he be better with an off-season to rest, or will he just be, you know, now he's a middle infielder and he'll be 33 next year. In fact, he's 33 now. He'll be his age 33 season next year. And, you know, maybe that's just the point where that happens. I don't know. They got to be worried about it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of those things. I was excited about his extension. You know, I was like, oh yeah, cool, J.J. Hardy will be around, that's good. He's like a very solid defender at shortstop. But you can't be that much of a net negative at the plate. I mean, he's still a positive war value player, but I don't
0.3 BWAR as I'm looking at it right here.
Yeah, and that's really a below average player.
And it has
an average WAR value is around 2 most years.
It hasn't helped that the Orioles have had so many other terrible hitters that they haven't really, because if you even I don't know that I could say I'd be okay with Hardy hitting like that if he was just the number 9 hitter and that was that, which he hasn't been. And maybe next year that will adjust further downward as, you know. I mean, I don't know what Buck Showalter has to deal with. But it feels like it's just like he can't move Hardy down because, you know, he doesn't want to offend J.J. Hardy and have him hitting below Daryl Alvarez or something. But
kind of does seem like that. And
Or you know, Buck is just wants Hardy to turn it around. So I feel like Buck gives guys who are his guys plenty of chances.
Yeah, he does.
Which, you know, is there's times where that's a virtue. And, you know, then there's times where you've left Bud Norris in the rotation basically until July when his ERA is like, you know, whatever, seven. Yeah. And then Buck is giving quotes like, well, you know, that's the guy who won 15 games for us last year. Which is true. But it ain't 2014 anymore.
Yeah, and they gave him whatever, 15, 20 starts.
And meanwhile, they're jerking around Kevin Gausman because they don't want to put Bud Norris in the bullpen, and then it takes them another month to DFA Bud Norris, even when he's still bad in the bullpen.
Yep.
That's when sticking by your guys is a problem.
I don't know. The Hardy thing, Jimenez, both, I mean, besides, it's those two and Jones are the only ones with guaranteed contracts, and right now, they're two lead weights. I was thinking about if you could try to even trade either one of them in the offseason, but it would be all salary dump.
Yep.
I don't think you get anything for it, and you're might even have to eat some money.
Yet another Joe Gunkel is what you get. Who's done decently for Bowie, I will say, but
he has. He's an intriguing arm. More than I thought they would get for Alejandro De Haza.
Absolutely. And Alex, we even talked about him on the podcast not long after they acquired him, and I assumed, based on his career numbers in the minors, he would not excel as a starter, and if they made him a bullpen arm, he looked like he had a future. And then they put him in the rotation, and he's actually done pretty well for himself. So, remember, I know even less than Jon Snow. But speaking of Bucks guys who've gotten way too many chances, like Matt Wieters, what are they going to do with him? Are they going to give him a qualifying offer? I after watching him, that is going to be an agonizing choice because you're basically going off of faith that Scott Boras is not going to be the first guy to have a client take one.
Basically.
Because they're still hiding him.
I don't know if some team just sees it like, okay, like he missed a ton of time. He couldn't play on back-to-back days for a while. You know, he's got this wrist thing. He's better than this. Like, we'll give him a multi-year deal. I could see that happening, but it's just he's been so unbelievably bad this year that it's so hard. It'll be a sweaty 72 hours or whatever for Dan Duquette.
Like I find
he's gonna give him.
I find people talking about pitch framing tiresome, but the fact is it's part of the game right now. And Wieters is basically one of the worst at it right now. This year.
Yeah.
On a rate basis, he is, I believe, among the bottom 10 catchers who've caught, like, 1,000 pitches or something like that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, he was early in his career, like, pre-2013 or 14. He was actually rated, like, relatively well. But it's one of those things, if, like, I've read up some about it. I'm not sure how gigantic of a believer in it I am, but you know, I think there's definitely some validity to it. It's like taller guys tend to struggle with it, and especially as they get older. It kind of makes sense. I mean, Wieters is 6'5". He's caught a lot of games in his career.
The Orioles have not been shy about using Matt Wieters in previous years. Riding him like a rented mule, you might say.
Yeah, I don't know what they'll do with Wieters. I really don't. At this point, I think it would just be very hard to give him a qualifying offer. You'd have to be very sure of what his market was.
Yes. Because, like, your best case scenario really might be, well, he doesn't take it, and then he's one of these guys that only signs after the draft, and then you still don't get a draft pick for him.
Yeah.
If that happens.
Well, it didn't even, those two guys even still signed right before the draft, I think.
No, it had to be after the draft, because that's when the pick stopped.
I thought that they still signed in, like, May sometime. Maybe
yeah,
I'm
Drew
wrong
and Morales, it was like, they kind of sort of got agreements lined up and then signed them, like, the day after the draft.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's... I don't know. Weeters was being a catcher, you know? And he's still, like, if you don't count framing, he's, like... You know, He's even looked bad at the stuff he used to be good at, throwing out guys. But I think a team could do. I mean, a team could believe that's just rust.
I think and I don't know how many people on, particularly on Camden Chat, are accepting of this, but I feel like it's possible that because he was so focused on rehabbing the Tommy John, maybe he did not get to do his usual work to keep his stamina for catching, you know, at the level it needs to be at.
Sure.
So maybe with an off season where he doesn't have to focus on only the elbow, you know, he can do other things and will be better. I don't think that's a crazy idea, but I don't know that you want to bet $16 million of your next year's payroll on that.
Because that's the thing, like, Chen and Davis are not going to accept theirs. They're just not. They're gonna be able to go get better deals, and everyone knows that. It's like, if you're the Orioles and Weeters accepts it, I mean, that totally destroys any like a lot of off-season plans.
All right, because again, as you mentioned, you're $50 million. If Matt Weeters accepts the qualifying offer, you've lost a third of your $50 million. Just like that. You haven't even gotten to go out and look at players on the free agent market to improve your team. You've just kept a guy who's already here and hasn't been all that good.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a big risk.
It's a big risk. But then you're just like, he's a catcher. He's got a decent track record other than this year. He and Scott Boras is his agent. Like, is that something that screams out to you that he's going to accept a qualifying offer?
It
like,
I, it does.
Yeah. But he's been so bad that it's become more of a question than it ever should have been.
Yeah.
Or however, like, I thought it was, at least.
Also file under the I know even less than Jon Snow category. I had a fervent belief that Matt Weeters was going to have the contract year of all contract years.
Oh, so did I. Because before he went down in 2014, he was having, like, a really good season at the plate. He was, you know, throwing out runners again and all that stuff, but he is, I don't know, he doesn't look good from either side, batting. He doesn't look great behind the plate, blocking pitches or throwing guys out or anything. I mean, he doesn't really look like himself, which, to be fair, I mean, he spent most of the last year resting.
You mentioned wild pitches and, you know, blocking pitches. So obviously the wild pitch, the fact that it's labeled a wild pitch would tend to throw some blame to the pitcher. But here's a stat for you. In 2013, when Weeters caught 1,201 innings, he allowed 28 wild pitches to go by him. Or I should say 28 wild pitches went by him. I don't know.
Yeah.
He allowed it. So he has caught 374 and a third innings, so a little bit less than one third as many innings so far this year, and he has allowed, and 16 wild pitches have gone by him.
Oof.
So on a rate basis, like if you triple the number of wild pitches, you're basically, you know, you've nearly, what is that, like 80% more on top of what he had allowed, you know, than 2 years ago. So, I mean, that's a guy who's kind of lost some of the physical capability to just move, or he's lost instinct or whatever, you know, or it's rust that's keeping that from happening.
Yeah. Maybe some team looks at his medicals, looks at the tape and says, yeah, that's just rust. And, you know, my theory of the Atlanta Braves swooping in to give him a big contract comes true.
I mean, that team might be right. They might be right.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a completely far-fetched theory.
I don't either, but it's so hard. It's so hard for someone, even any team. I mean, if any team got a $16 million contract that they didn't want, it would hamper them.
Except for the Dodgers.
Yeah. Who even just on their TV contract alone, they're still making money this year.
It's crazy. They're crazy.
Yeah.
Alex, here's the thing. There's like no help on the farm for next year, really.
Not a ton.
You
No, I mean.
look at and the Steve Mlevskys of the world will trumpet the fact that, oh well, Norfolk and Bowie both won their divisions and they're in the playoffs, which is true. But here's the
But
thing.
irrelevant. Yeah.
There's nobody on those teams well, I don't want to say nobody, but there's not many players on those teams who are just like surefire going to help the Orioles in the future. I went to see,
Especially next
yeah,
year.
I went to see one Bowie game last month, and they were playing the Pirates affiliate Altoona. And as I was just perusing the program, there was something that struck me, which is namely that the Altoona team, the Curve, had only about five players who were born in the 1980s, because you want youngish guys on your double-A roster, like
Yeah. So if that
22 to 24.
if they're young and in like that age range and in double A, they're probably pretty good prospects.
And the Bay Sox, I believe, had like seven or eight guys younger than 25. So like more than half of their roster is like 26 to 28. Like
Yeah.
you don't have that's not your prospects if you're 27 and you're in double A. That's not
Yeah.
to say there's zero chance they will ever make the big leagues, but it's not anybody's best.
I mean, yeah, it's people like the Christian Walkers and Trey Mancinis, although I don't know. I don't know.
Ray
Mancini put up some
Mancini, your
monster
Eastern
numbers.
League batting title
Yeah.
winner.
He took a 0 for 30 just to get it too.
That
So
I found that
qualified.
interesting.
That was great. I mean, that's pretty crazy. Apparently, I read something. He could have taken all the way up to like a 0 for 37 and still had the batting title.
Well, there you go.
So, I mean, he's obviously been really good, and I'm not going to take that away from him. And I haven't seen him, or I haven't seen him before, so I don't know if he's made adjustments that would consider him to be a higher grade of prospect than he was before. But those are just guys that they don't. I don't know. I don't know how much they're gonna move the needle for you. They're not the impact guys that a lot of teams are bringing up lately,
Like
and there's nothing to speak of
if for
in starting
instance,
rotation.
if Chris Davis leaves in free agency, which I hope it doesn't happen, but if it does, then you're looking at Christian Walker and Trey Mancini, or probably you're gonna have a spring training competition to be your first baseman next year. You're not gonna sit there and think, well, it's okay, we're gonna replace Chris Davis with either of those guys.
Yeah, no way.
It's just not happening.
Yeah. And yeah. Pretty much. And Walker hasn't had the greatest year, but he started off really slow, but he's actually put up some decent numbers at Norfolk, but it's just you're talking first baseman, they're just gonna have to hit the hell out of the ball to be any valuable to you, and I just don't know if either of them can really do it. I don't know. I don't know.
Mancini, by the way, for anybody who hasn't really heard them talking about him, he started the year at Frederick, and he was batting 314, 341, 527, good for an .868 slugging percentage. So they promoted him to Bowie after 52 games. He went on to play 84 games in Bowie, where he batted 359 with a 395 on base percentage and a 586 slugging percentage. That is a 981 OPS at the AA level for a 23-year-old,
Yes.
which that is a player who is still a prospect. So don't
Yeah,
want to take that
he's
away from
definitely,
him.
he has raised his profile greatly. And there's been, I've seen some stuff, hints of him sort of shortening his swing, getting quicker to the ball, stuff like that. But there's still not too much positive buzz in the scouting industrial complex about him yet.
I think I saw, I think Kylie McDaniel on Fangraphs wrote about him in the midseason sometime and noted his hot year and said, well, you might get a platoon bat out of that, which, you know, if you get a platoon bat out of an eighth round pick, you've still done well there. As long as you're not expecting him to be your savior at first base, you know? Like, I don't know if they could bounce him to left field and he could do all right or what. But like a 6'4", that's probably a little tall for an outfielder. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the frustrating thing, is it's like, if he could play left field, then he's probably a much better prospect.
Maybe he's added some weight, maybe he's quick in his swing, but, you know, you're rolling a lot of dice there. You don't want to count on him as the savior.
No, not at all. And there's basically nothing to speak of. I mean, is Tyler Wilson going to be a rotation guy? He had, like, one good start this year, but I don't know. Mike Wright, like we talked about, I don't know. You got a ton of bullpen interesting arms. And you got some interesting guys in the lower minors and stuff, but I don't know. I don't know where they're –
Chance Cisco, the catcher, made his way up to Bowie by season's end, and I believe he did fairly well in a small sample there. And, of course, he's going out to the Arizona Fall League, so he'll get to – I think probably they're doing that because they want him to get more experience catching.
Yeah, and he missed some time.
He did miss a little time. What did he have, some kind of ankle problem or something earlier in the year?
That sounds right. I don't know. All their, like, young catchers got hurt at the same time.
Yeah, Jonah Heim was hurt for a while, I think.
Yeah.
Was Alex Murphy hurt a little while there?
Yeah, he was too.
Those are all your... they all drafted them in 2013 out of high school. And
yeah.
They all... it was like they had some kind of cosmic connection. What happens to one happens to all of them.
But yeah, Cisco's definitely an interesting prospect. The big thing with him is if he can stick a catcher...
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's any doubt that he'll be able to hit, because, like, he won the South Atlantic League batting title at age 18 last year.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty big deal. Maybe age 19, whatever. But, you know, your first full season professional ranks, win the batting title when you're a high school draftee. That's pretty good stuff.
Yeah, finish this year at Bowie was a big deal. I mean, you'll start out next year at Bowie, be the full, be whatever, the starting catcher. And if you're at Bowie, you're a step away from the major leagues.
Yeah, they call plenty of guys up straight from Bowie.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about plenty, but it's not unheard of. Michael Givens made the leap, for instance, this season.
Yeah. Hey, Givens, Gausman, Machado. A lot of guys go straight from... Because AAA is more like...
Bundy came straight from AA, not that he's been seen in the majors since then.
Yeah. I guess that's one thing for next year. What the hell they're gonna do with Dylan Bundy?
Bullpen.
Probably, yeah. Cause it was so frustrating. I was thinking earlier in the year, like, okay, they'll stretch Bundy out, and he'll be able to take one of the rotation spots for at least a little bit for next year. Nope.
Nope.
He got some.
Something that Dr. James Andrews had never seen before in his shoulder.
Yeah. His quotes about it weren't too inspiring the other day. I don't know if you read that, but it was just like, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
You don't really know what happened or how to prevent it or if it's going to happen again.
Yeah, basically the ultimate authority on baseball injuries, more or less, is Dr. James Andrews. Never seen it before. Unless you're the Mets, I guess, then Dr. Andrews isn't much of an authority. No, that's Matt Harvey. Let's not even go there. That's nothing to do with the Orioles here.
No.
But yeah, I think Bundy will end up in the bullpen, and they'll just kind of see what he turns into.
Rule five him, basically. Treat him like Jason Garcia.
Yeah, I don't know quite that bad. I mean, that depends on how he performs, I guess. If he's rusty as heck and walking everybody in sight or whatever.
I read something. I don't know if this is... I don't know if you would know... I think if he stays on the roster for some amount of time in 2016, he gains an option back. I don't know if...
Oh, I don't know anything about that. I know he got I know he got a fourth option year because of the Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
Because he was in the minors when they put him on the DL in the minors.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought I heard read something like that, but that seems wrong.
I'm not saying you're
But yeah, I
wrong,
mean,
but I don't know that you're right about that.
yeah, I don't know what they're. I don't know how they're gonna. I don't know how they're gonna treat. I don't know how they're gonna treat it, or how they're gonna hide him, or whatever. But he's got to be on the major league roster next year.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're talking like. I don't even know if it's the Gar. Well, as far as Garcia, where it's the guy you can't option, and maybe it would be him, but I think he might be more in the Chaz Rowe mold, where he's just a guy who's kind of there. He's not really your long reliever. He's not really one of your back end guys.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
I mean, if you, if
because I mean, you're gonna want to stretch him back out to be a starter if he could ever do it.
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't know.
You're basically
we'll
talking if Bundy's in spring training and he has a really good spring training, and they're confident in him, then you could even talk about, well, you put Bundy in there, and then a guy like Brad Brock that you trade, because I think Brock has some value to somebody, probably. And if Bundy is basically filling the Brad Brock occasional multi-inning reliever role who can strike guys out, then, you know, maybe you kind of shuffle him out, and then you'd probably be talking like Bundy is your 7th-inning guy, and Givens is your 8th-inning guy, and Britton is your 9th-inning guy. And maybe they'll throw Mike Wright in the picture. I don't know. There's so many possibilities.
Yeah. They have a ton of options for the bullpen.
One
I'm
thing
really
I feel pretty
them.
Sure about saying is Jason Garcia was going to get optioned to the minors, like, the day he can possibly be optioned to the minors.
Yes. That is a safe bet.
Yeah.
And he has actually looked pretty good, I would say. Better since he came back. He's still not really throwing 98, but...
He's been throwing, like, 95 with some sink, I think.
Yeah, that's what it looks
which
like to
is,
me. Which, yeah, that'll play.
Will play. What's our exact number? So he basically, after coming off the DL in August, he pitched in 7 games in August. 9 2/3 innings, had a 1.86 ERA. He's allowed 2 earned runs in 2 innings in September, so that's upped his second half number a little bit. But, you know, his second half... 3.09 ERA over 11 2/3 innings. That's a guy worth having around.
Yeah.
It took them a lot of finagling to get to that point, basically making a mockery of the Rule 5 process. But that's what Dan Duquette's there to do.
Pretty much. Let's see if I feel like they're going to change the rules just because of him.
They might. They might do it just for him. I don't know what they could change. Like. Maybe he changed the number of DL days you're allowed.
Yeah, the injury thing. Like, he's done that, like, every year. Like,
it won't be the last time.
I stop that from happening, but...
It won't be the last time I bring this one up, Alex, because it still amazes me when I think about it. But friggin' Ryan Flaherty had, like, tonsillitis or something like that.
60-day
DL. And he was going to miss, like, 2 games, and they stuck him on the... Stuck him on the DL I think that was like right in the middle of August, so he could get activated on September the 1st, and they could. I don't remember who they wanted to bring onto the roster at that time, but
yeah, it was probably like Bill Hall or something.
I mean, what a ridiculous thing! That's hilarious and awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't they like they made it? They put him on like a really extended rehab assignment too. It was just like they did the same thing with Garcia.
Yeah, they stretched him out like the every possible day of rehab.
Yeah.
And coincidentally, the day they activated him was like the exact day they needed to activate him to keep him in the organization.
Showalter even said it. He was like, well, we only need 34 more days at this point, so...
He does not care. He will get what he wants.
Yeah.
Who will be next year's Rule 5 adventure? Like, it's fun at this point to think about how they'll do it. It was actually disappointing last year. They didn't get Michael Almanzar around at any point.
Yeah,
they even tried to hide him with a knee. They put him on a DL with a knee thing in spring training, but then by the time he was healthy, they still didn't have a spot for him, so they finally reluctantly gave him back to the Red Sox.
And then traded for him.
And then traded for him. What did they trade? Jamal Weeks to the Red Sox or something?
Yeah, for him and Kelly Johnson, right?
Yeah.
Kelly Johnson had a walk-off hit against the Yankees on Sunday night that year, I think.
I think Kelly Johnson's heading to the playoffs again this year with the Mets.
Yeah. Good for him.
This is good for him, I guess. I don't know. I never thought much about him, but what a, I mean, that's just an interesting story. A guy who keeps just getting traded everywhere, but keeps making the playoffs.
Like Delman.
Like Delman. Apparently, there was some friction in the Orioles organization about DFAing Delman.
Yes, I saw that. That was dumb.
There was the Jerry Krasnick wrote about it on ESPN, and that was like, honestly, Alex, I don't think Jerry Krasnick is a sensationalist writer, but I found that article to be overly dramatic.
A little bit.
Or basically there was like two paragraphs where it was like, well, there's some front office strife. Some weren't happy that Delmon Young got DFA'd, and also maybe the Dan Duquette Toronto thing.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, that president job has been taken by the Cleveland guy.
Mark Shapiro.
Mark Shapiro, who I believe has Baltimore ties, if I'm remembering my people right.
Isn't his agent... Or his father was an agent or something based in Baltimore?
Something of that sort.
That sound right? I can't
and
remember.
And he, like, grew up here. But anyway, so that job is out.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest things from that article was some people in the organization are mad that Rick Peterson has so much control over the minor league pitching development.
I thought they were mad that his influence was shrinking.
Oh, I thought it was because it was strong.
I'll have to see if I can find this. I thought it was a lament that Peterson's not as influential as he was before, which I thought was weird because, honestly, I don't know what Rick Peterson has done for us. I'm not saying he hasn't done anything, but it's...
I don't know. So it's the paragraph says, the scouting community buzzes about riffs on any number of topics, ranging from... Minor league pitching development director Rick Peterson's influence in the organization.
Ah, okay. Well,
so it doesn't say either way.
Okay,
but it
I must have
like,
misread that.
It sounds like they don't like that he has so much influence.
Because, I mean, he was like supposed to be the guy who was going to turn the cavalry into the cavalry.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, you know, Chris Tillman turned it around. They've had some pitching successes, but they've had a lot of failures. Mostly failures.
Yeah, like, you know, you got Tillman 2.5 good years. Arrieta, they finally traded him, and then suddenly he was good in Chicago. I'm not mad about it, but I wish that could have happened here.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, what being...
Mattis
yeah.
turned into a reliever who was kind of sometimes a good loogie, but then kind of sometimes gives up home runs to... Raul Ibanez in the playoffs, and also Mike Moustakas in the playoffs, and
you had to do it.
Oh God, I know. I might have to beep that out. That was obscene. I might have to. No, but and then Zach Britton turned into a great closer, but I don't even know how much that was Rick Peterson. Like, did Rick Peterson come up with the string drill? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he did.
I don't know either. I don't know what. And, you know, like, is it, like, you know, I've thought about this. What about the minor league pitching development? I mean, it's been not good for a long time.
Yeah.
What, like, and almost nothing has been consistent over that amount of time.
Yep.
Other than Peter Angelos, but what is he doing to it? I mean...
Right, as much like, as people don't like Peter Angelos, like...
What could his possible involvement be that deep?
Yeah. It's not his fault.
So it just seems... Yeah. And I guess I get the Toronto stuff. That wasn't handled beautifully, but... I don't know. Deal with it.
You gotta deal with what's there.
One of the reports recently, part of it was just like... Some people are mad about the Duquette thing in the organization because they thought they were all going to get raises.
Everybody thought they were going to get promoted because it was going to be, Duquette's out of there. And then maybe... Brady Anderson becomes your kind of figurehead GM. I don't know. Although, honestly, I didn't get the impression Brady Anderson was angling to become the GM when I listened to him speak at FanFest. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong, or maybe, you know, he was soft-pedaling his interest. But
I think he will be the GM one day.
It sounded like he was interested in working with individual players to kind of improve things and not be, you know... The guy scouring the waiver wire.
Yeah. We'll see. It'll be interesting. But I think Yeah, I've thought for a bit that he would be next in line for a GM candidacy. It makes sense. I mean, like, if Duquette left and you wanted to keep some organizational continuity, it would make more sense than bringing in some old fart GM.
Yeah, I think there's a decent chance he's being groomed, but I don't get the sense that that's what he wants to be right now.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, like that was weird. Like, oh, everybody wanted a promotion, and then suddenly there was no promotions to be had. Like,
Yeah.
who gives a
And
crap, man? You know, that happens to everybody in every job.
yeah. It's just people willing to bitch anonymously to a national reporter.
Like, how many people out there listening do you think have at their work, they're like waiting for some old guy to retire so their boss's boss can get promoted, and then their boss can get promoted, and then they can become their boss's job? Like, you know,
Yeah.
it's like every workplace in America, that kind of thing is playing out. You just gotta roll with it. But they're not writing, you know, ESPN articles about, you know, Podunk software company, blah 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 office in Linthicum.
Yeah, and there's even, I don't know why I necessarily do it, but I like to go venture onto some Orioles fan message board sometimes. And there's some people out there that just want to discredit everything that Dan Duquette has done. So one guy said he believed this and defended his position that the reason for the Orioles turnaround was 85% due to Buck Showalter and 15% Andy MacPhail, and that Dan Duquette had nothing to do with it at all.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I just it's just you're not remembering things correctly or the way that or you're remembering the way you want to. It's just obviously Andy MacPhail's fingerprints are still on the team, but like the season-ending rotation for 2012 was four-fifths Duquette acquisitions.
Like
That
Andy
was his first
MacPhail
year.
was never gonna unearth Miguel Gonzalez. He was never gonna bring in Chen, I don't think.
No, he was never going to. I mean, not that this ended up being a long-term great acquisition, but Jason Hamill, that Guthrie trade for Hamill and Matt Lindstrom, that's nothing that Andy MacPhail would have ever done.
I don't think MacPhail would have brought up Machado at the juncture Duquette did in 2012.
Yeah.
And I know we've talked about this before. Think about all those baseball yakkers were like, oh my God, the Orioles got a trade for Chase Headley or blah, 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 whoever the heck else was on the market that year. Dan Duquette looked at the market and he was like, yeah, you know what? Those guys kind of suck, and we'll just make our awesome shortstop become an awesome third baseman. The rest is history. I don't think MacPhail would have done that. That was a key move because then you got freaking Mark Reynolds off third base over to first base where he was kind of decent.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the moves that helped them down the stretch the most. I mean,
Huge, huge.
keep their record, whatever, they built up a good record to that point, but were, struggling and clearly had some position deficiencies, and they bring up Machado to settle that, Nate McLouth to settle left field. I mean, a ton of Duquette moves, even in that first year where he had little time because of his late hire to even affect the roster at all. And by 2014, I mean, it's still four-fifths his rotation, much of the bullpen, and then like, Nelson Cruz and a bunch of other guys. So it's just don't be dumb. Don't call Dan Duquette a bad GM because they're struggling this year. And you don't think he's done anything to help improve the team. It's just
I mean, it is kind of, you gotta wonder, okay, has his magic worn out, so to speak? Like, has the league kind of adjusted and taken the Duquette guys before he can get to them or something like that? Or did he just have a bad off season as far as all, none of his moves worked out?
yeah, and it just kind of seems what happened. I mean, in the years past, you've seen him do very similar to what he did this offseason, which was sort of pick up guys he likes, the former first round picks, the cheap players, and just sort of cycle through them until he hits on one. And really, he didn't hit on any. I mean, he had Jimmy Paredes for a while, and that fell off the table.
Travis Snyder. I mean, he looked like a guy who could be like your next sort of Steve Pierce kind of type, where he was like a, like you said, former first round pick, just kind of never really put all of it together, but he had a good season last year. Pirates were kind of looking to move on from him because they had other outfielders already. It's like, okay, well, you get this guy and put him out there, and then you know, you get the gif where he's swinging at the 97 mile an hour fastball and he hasn't even started to swing when it goes in the glove, and then he swings.
Yeah.
That's probably the indelible image of Travis Snyder's Orioles tenure to me.
Yeah, pretty much. So it was a bad offseason. Swung and missed. There were opportunities to get a little more creative, but they didn't take them, which, you know, obviously now look bad, but they didn't. They rolled the dice on some guys, and they missed on every single one.
Missed on Delman. They missed on Snyder.
Deaza.
Low, yeah. God.
Reimold, in a sense. Everett Cabrera. I mean, just, you can keep rattling them off.
So many.
Steve Pierce, to an extent.
I mean, they've DFA'd two full outfields.
Yeah.
If we count Chris Parmalee as an outfielder. Which he sort of was, but he sort of wasn't. But he wasn't the answer.
I forgot he was in the org still, because he eventually accepted his assignment, but then broke his arm 2 days later.
Yeah, he's still in Norfolk. David Lowe's in Norfolk. Nolan Reimold was in Norfolk, and now he's back for reasons I don't understand. And I like Nolan Reimold. I like the idea of Nolan Reimold, but I don't know why.
Yeah. The only thing interesting about him right now is he's got like a 11% walk rate, which is cool.
He's always had a good walk rate, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's nice. If he could hit 275, it'd be a lot better, but
wouldn't it though? Wouldn't it? So we're getting towards the end of our time this evening. So Alex, do you have any final thoughts on the Orioles, either now or going forward at this moment in time? 10:47 p.m. Eastern Time in the evening on September the 10th, 2015.
I would just say, you know, you got to ride out the rest of the September. Hope for some good baseball here and there. Some weird things to happen. Find the little moments of happiness. Try not to focus too much on how this season's been such a disappointment. You know, we've had the grieving period of the last couple of weeks of watching them be terrible. So just enjoy the rest of the season. Get ready for an off season of stupid, baseless rumors and innuendos. And just enjoy the next 3 weeks of baseball.
I would settle for an off season of baseless rumors as opposed to last season where there were like no rumors of any kind ever. That would be preferable. But I think, you know, what I'm looking forward to, Alex, is I want to see if Manny Machado and Jonathan Scope can just be like the awesome tandem of BFFs that stick around for years and years. But I really want them to extend Machado this offseason. And I kind of hope they, at some point, also keep Scope around for a while for probably less money. Well, of course, less money, but I don't know. I think those two guys will both be good for a while. I think there's reason to believe that's true. As Jonathan Scope just makes me feel like he's going to be an Adam Jones kind of hitter, which is, of course, frustrating at times, but it's also pretty good in balance.
It's exciting.
Punish the mistakes. Swing it a lot in the dirt, but there will be mistakes because nobody's perfect. I guess that's about all that we have for tonight. And I don't know. I want them to finish 500. I know all the draft pick and stuff, but I just want it to not be a losing season. I don't want to have all off season thinking, man, what if that was the first year and there's going to be 13 more? And then what if I'm 45 by the time they win again, Alex? I don't want to spend all off season thinking that. What if I'm 45 before the Orioles have another winning season?
That would be really bad.
It would be. So that's why they need to go, is it 15-8 at this point in time to have an 82-80 record? They could go,
that would be impressive.
They could go 14-9 to go 81-81, which is not a winning season, but is also not a losing season.
Exactly.
So 14-9, that's what I'm looking at.
What's your goal?
Find a way to do it. And I don't expect they will, but that's what I'm hoping for. Because why would they suddenly start beating the above 500 teams that they have not beaten all year?
For you. That's why. They're going to do it for you, Mark.
Well, geez, if they're doing stuff for me, I should have aimed my goals higher at the outset here, I think. I should have made that more clear. Orioles, yeah. You need to win the World Series to make me happy. Why didn't I do it? I don't know. But we'll see. That's what
your power only gets them to 500.
That's true. Maybe it's because I asked for little that they could give me that. If they can give me that, 14-9, one game at a time. And the next game is against the Royals, and I believe Mike Wright is starting. So yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, my hopes not too high, but that's where I'm at. Like you said, Alex, it's got to be the little things, and maybe they'll give us some little things. So that's all the time we have for tonight. Give us a follow on Twitter if you are not already. We are at Camden Chat on Twitter, and you can follow Alex. He is at Alex Conway, CC. The letters,
that is right.
The letters C and C, as in Camden Chat. You can follow me at EatMoreSK, ESSKAY, just like the hot dogs. And if you want, you can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/CamdenChat. But be aware that that's because there's weirdos who comment on the Facebook page. And you may be entertained by them, but stay on your side of the glass and do not poke the Facebook commenters.
Don't feed the trolls.
No, don't feed them either, because then they will expect to be fed by human hands and there will be problems for everybody. They'll fly around and crap on all of our hats. But give us a like. You will see when our articles are posted on there. But also, you should bookmark CamdenChat.com. And check us out through the day every day, because every day, Monday through Friday, there's multiple articles. And we're always there on weekends for recaps, too. So for Alex Conway, I am Mark Brown. We are bringing you CamdenCast. This is Birdland, and we are out.